global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. Stocks are trading higher, where we are brought to you by Bentley University. What do rebooting America's oldest ski shop and crunching numbers at Vistaprint have in common? An MBA from Bentley University that prepares graduates to innovate and lead, because business is everywhere. Prepare here. Stocks are advancing, S&P 500 index rising from a two-week low, led by gains in banks and consumer shares. The S&P 500 index up 8 points to 2,073, a gain of 0.4%. NASDAQ up 7 points, a gain of 0.1%. Dow Industrials up 80 points, a gain of 0.5%. The 10-year down 6/32 with a yield of 1.85%. Gold up $6 the ounce to $1,296.30, an advance there of 0.4%. Did get back above $1,300 the ounce. Crude oil down 1.1%. A barrel of West Texas Intermediate down 53 cents now, $45.40 a barrel. I'm Charlie Pelleton. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
All right, Charlie, thank you so much. And the Bloomberg Advantage is brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Why buy a single stock when you can invest in the entire sector? Visit sectorspdrs.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.
All right, ain't got no money. That could be the issue with Puerto Rico making a big decision not to make a payment today. Michelle Gasky, who covers this issue for us, by Bloomberg News Puerto Rico reporter. And this is, this maybe been telegraphed, but a big deal nonetheless.
It is a big deal because the Government Development Bank for years has been working on all different municipal bond deals that come off of the island. So Wall Street is very familiar with them. The whole financial markets are. And they are under an emergency period now. So the bank will be winding down. And now here we have the first default where their bondholders won't be paid in full today.
And yet I got to just say, I love this story too, out by our Muni team. And it says, you never know from looking at the $3.7 trillion municipal market that the largest restructuring in its history is unfolding in Puerto Rico. I mean, the rest of the muni market is just saying, what, Puerto Rico, you're a story unto yourself.
That's right, because over the past couple of years or so, this Puerto Rico debt has really slowly moved over into the hands of more hedge funds and distressed debt buyers and away from the traditional municipal bond buyers. So that has taken away some of the threat to what will happen in the overall muni market. But there is a bigger date coming up, July 1. Puerto Rico and its agencies owe a full $2 billion. Of that is about $800 million of general obligations.
Oh, what's the date?
July 1st.
Okay.
July 1st. So if they miss a payment on that, many people in the market have told us they anticipate you will then start seeing some maybe a spillover effect in the broader muni market, but definitely high yield muni bonds in general will move on that.
Who owns these bonds now?
The Puerto Rico bonds?
Yeah.
It's a lot of hedge funds.
Specifically the ones that are defaulting here. Are they people who bought and expected a payment on par? They've had this from the start, or these people who've seen the distressed situation and kind of knew what they were getting into?
Yeah, it's a combo now. Again, it's the distressed debt guys and the hedge funds, but also a large chunk of this is held by the island's local credit unions and also individual buyers who purchased through a broker, an on-island broker. A lot of the GDB debt is held on island.
So where is Congress in all of this? I mean, is it that they are expected to come in and help in terms of Puerto Rico's financial future? I know there's stuff going on.
Yeah.
Where are we in terms of progress on that front?
They're in recess this week.
Right.
And they've said that once they get back on May 10th, the plan is to have a new draft version of this Puerto Rico bill to work on. But the problem is, we're now in May, and Puerto Rico faces this July 1st payment. Can Congress get this Puerto Rico bill through the House, through the Senate, and signed by the White House before
that, right?
July 1?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. I mean, that's probably not going to happen. So these guys could be in facing a big problem. It's not going to go away.
It's true. It's, you know, it depends on, you know, can Congress get something done? That's a very big hurdle for them. And also, what does this mean for the ongoing negotiations between Puerto Rico and its creditors? Can they actually get a broader debt restructuring done by July 1? Many people are skeptical of that happening.
Meantime, you worry about the people on the ground, Puerto Rico's, you know, citizens, if you will, and what services they're not going to be getting, some of them really necessary, a lot of them necessary.
That's true. The governor in his address yesterday talked about how his administration is struggling to pay for fuel for police cars and for school buses and struggling to pay for programs for special needs children. And of course, there's the health care on the island. At least half of its residents rely on the island's health care plan.
So, okay, we got like 20 seconds. I feel like we can talk hours on this story. Is there a lesson yet to be learned, or we don't know yet with Puerto Rico?
We don't know yet. We'll find out how exactly they're going to be able to get out of this over the next few months.
It ain't over, though.
It ain't over.
All right, and I know you'll be covering it for us. Michelle Caskey, Puerto Rico reporter. We actually have our own Puerto Rico reporter here at Bloomberg News. It's such a story. This is Bloomberg Radio.
This is the Bloomberg Advantage with Corey Johnson and Carol Masser on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, Bloomberg Advantage brought to you by SEI. Has evolving investor and regulatory demands affected your investment firm's operational readiness? Well, if that readiness is affected, imagine transforming your business with SEI's global platform at seic.com/imagine.
Talk a little about angel investing, particularly in healthcare. Donna Patton is with us, managing director at Accesso Innovation Partners, joining us in our Bloomberg 1200 studio in Boston, along with Woody Benson, venture capitalist and Bloomberg contributor. Woody, take it away.
Thanks, Kyle. We're happy to have Donna with us, who, by the way, is a master's in atmospheric physics from MIT, plus more. So, with all those great credentials, how did you become an angel investor?
Well, so first of all, let me say, my pleasure to be here today. I became an angel investor because in my 20s, I started my first company. And when it was sold, I started using my MIT connections to all the VCs around. And I was looking for another small company to work in. And instead, I got an offer to become a venture capitalist. So that's how I got into it. By then, I think I was, I don't know, 31 or so.
Now, a lot has changed in all of those years.
No kidding.
And one of the biggest things that's changed is the plethora of where capital is available from. So walk us through kind of what was and what is from your perspective.
Sure. So in my first company, there were basically two choices. One is, you know, you find a venture capitalist or a venture capitalist who would fund you. And the other opportunity, you know, the other option was finding a strategic partner, really a large company that, you know, would be willing to make a strategic investment. That's actually what we did for my very first company. And today, you know, now 30 years or so later, you've got crowdsourcing, you've got all kinds of angels, individual angels, angels online, groups of angels, syndicated angels. I mean, there's just so much angel, as you said, a plethora. It's proliferated.
Well, I feel like, where I'm out in the Bay Area, in the Silicon Valley, I feel like a lot of the entrepreneurs or early people at some companies, when they look at how their wealth got created, when they achieve some wealth, they think, well, it was someone backed my startup. I want a piece of that. And so they will then start plowing, you know, small investments of $25,000, $50,000, small to them, into some startups as well as angel investors.
Right. That's a good reason to do it, and actually, that's kind of a good angel to have too, because it's someone at least who has had the experience. Not all angels have any experience.
I always remember being an SFO right around the time when Facebook was going public, and all these geeky-looking people were reading Investing for Dummies, and I was like, "Oh my God, look at all that capital!" But there's all these new models, too. Like, we were talking about bonds for angel investing. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Yeah, I was just looking at a deal a couple of months ago in the consumer. It's a consumer business. Fashion, actually. And I was really surprised because I actually had been buying their products, and I got this thing in the mail with the whole stack of, documents for floating bonds. That actually, they were like 5-year bonds, and they, they had a return, they had a face value, and
of course, we know about like all the red sheet things, and then there was this one deal I actually invested in. Is you can buy a percentage of someone's future earnings. I bought like a couple percent of 5 or 6 kids, and you're actually buying their future.
This is my point. You could never, years ago, even 20 years ago, they didn't have anything. And maybe one of the most recent thing that I've seen, are these new sort of nonprofit or hybrid nonprofits, because, they've creatively, entrepreneurs have figured out that there's an awful lot of money in the nonprofit world. And believe it or not, and they're not expecting a return.
Hey, Donna. I want to ask you? I'm just thinking about our listeners who are listening to this conversation. And I guess they're always curious about what are the trends that might have some staying power going forward. So I'm assuming that there are a lot of things that come across your desk. There's a lot of stuff that's muck. But I'm just curious, what are the things that catch your attention? What are the things that make you step up and want to invest?
In the individual companies, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're sort of getting to how do I do due diligence, right? So,
well, I'm actually interested in kind of the trends. What kind of areas are you finding the most potential to invest in?
Okay. So I'm interested in healthcare IT.
Right.
I think life sciences are interesting. Healthcare is not going to go. It's not going to go away. It's not a trend that, we'll see today in 10 years from, it's just not going to go away. And there's so many, regulatory and otherwise, levers and pressure points on it that it's just going to get more complex. And that's going to mean you need more products of different kinds to solve all this complexity.
So when we talk life sciences, literally, there's a picture of a human being on the wall and you can segment that. How do you segment, the opportunities? And what are the biggest by what the remunerations are today or the size of the market?
So when you say a human being, what are you?
A person. This is the cardio system is the.
What part of the person? Probably I would say because payers are such a big part and reimbursements are such a big part of being successful in healthcare, right? You can't go away from that. You've got to sort of follow where the payers are interested in. Frankly, there's a lot of money in Medicaid. Not that private payers want to get into it, but there's a lot of Medicaid dollars out there, and they focus on, the five disease states that contribute 80% of the cost.
Now,
so that's cardiovascular, COPD, diabetes. So go ahead.
Well,
sorry.
Well, I was going to ask you, what you know about MIT and someone who's just skirted the FDA, Elysium Health. With the anti-aging, drug that is, really captured, the MIT Tech Review and the press, what's your perspective on something like that?
Clever, I think, because being able to get, the FDA process is lengthy and it's expensive and it's no sure thing. Even if your data looks good, it really depends this is just my understanding. I've never done this personally, but my understanding is that it really depends on who you know on the FDA. Many things get passed by that really could be effective and could be helpful, but for whatever reason, and then other things that are a disaster actually get approved. I'm sure you've heard these stories as well as I have. So, to be able to get around things is a great idea. And aging, anti-aging, everyone loves that.
Well, Don, I look better. I've been taking them for 2 days.
All right, we can talk more about that when we come back. We're going to continue the conversation with Donna Patton. She's a managing director at Accesso Innovation Partners, joining us in our Bloomberg 1200 studio in Boston, along with Woody Benson, venture capitalist and Bloomberg contributor. Quick check on the markets. And as I mentioned, bouncing around a little bit, but we have seen stocks kind of holding on to their highs of the session, just coming off that right now. The S&P just up about 7 points. The Dow, a gain of 70 points. And the NASDAQ up about 5.5. More on the markets for you in just a moment, right here on Bloomberg Radio.
Bloomberg. global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters, I'm Charlie Pellett. The Dow, the S&P, and NASDAQ all advancing, and this update is brought to you by CBOE VIX Options and Futures. Volatility can be harnessed with CBOE VIX Options and Futures. See disclosures and learn more at cboe.com/powerfuloutcomesvix. Stocks are rebounding from the worst week since February. The dollar is weakening as traders lower expectations for higher rates in June after data this morning showed manufacturing slowed last month. Emerging market assets retreated. Gold is climbing. Gold up $7.20 the ounce now, $1,297.80, a gain of 0.6%. This morning we did have gold trading back above $1,300 the ounce. Crude oil down 2.3% to $44.87 a barrel, down $1 for West Texas Intermediate. The Dow, the S&P, NASDAQ all advancing. S&P up 6 points, a gain of 0.3%. The S&P at 2,071. NASDAQ up 4, a gain of 0.1%. Dow Industrials up 60 points, a gain of 0.3%. I'm Charlie Pelletin. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash.
Thank you very much, Charlie Pellett. The Bloomberg Advantage brought to you by the Commonwealth Financial Network. When it's time to change the conversation, talk with a broker-dealer RIA who's ready to listen. Call 866-462-3638 or visit commonwealth.com to learn more. It is 8:51 on the West Coast, even 8:52 on the West Coast, 11:52 on Wall Street.
The following is from Bloomberg View. Opinions and commentary from Bloomberg columnists.
I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg View. Washington's Metro, the country's second busiest rapid transit system, has been having a tough year. In March, the whole system shut down for a day for emergency repairs. Soon after, a top official warned that entire lines might need to be idled for up to 6 months. Train delays are rampant, and ridership has been declining since 2010, even as the region's population grows. There are many reasons for these problems. But one of them is lack of resources. Fares don't cover operating costs, and Metro has to go to the governments of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. every year to ask for money. It is the only major transit system in the U.S. that has no dedicated source of tax revenue. Yet Metro is generating tons of tax revenue. Study after study has showed that in the Washington area and elsewhere, having a rapid transit station in the neighborhood increases property values, which means more revenue from property taxes. Metro has found a way to tap into this value creation along the new Silver Line to Dulles Airport with special assessments on property near the stations. But there's been a big real estate boom around existing stations, too. How about giving Metro some more of the money it's generating? I'm Justin Fox, a columnist for Bloomberg View. For more Bloomberg opinion and commentary, please go to BloombergView.com or View Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg View.
And Bloomberg View commentaries can be heard every weekday at this time, also at 5:48 a.m., 8:48 a.m., and 2:48 p.m. Wall Street time, right here on Bloomberg Radio. Our guests at this hour, we're talking about angel investing, particularly in healthcare, in the healthcare area. Donna Patton is with us, still with us, Managing Director at Accesso Innovation Partners. Woody Benson also with us, venture capitalist and Bloomberg contributor, both joining us from our Bloomberg 1200 studio in Boston. Hey, so Donna, I mean, I just want to go back to, again, you know, in terms of, you know, the interesting areas that are going to have staying power for investors that will become kind of more mainstream. What do you think they will be ultimately?
Okay, so I think if we're talking about healthcare, and this could be right consumer or B2B.
Right.
I think anything that helps the outcome, helps people stay more healthy or get better faster, is something to look at. I mean, I would look at it at least, right? And so anything that drives care continuity, because that's usually when people move from one care setting to another, you know, they drop bits and information gets lost and they get bad care, you know, bad outcomes. So anything that really, you know, really hits that and really addresses better outcomes, really.
You know, there is one challenge.
Can
to
be
that.
IT, can be a wearable, can be, yeah, right?
There's one real big challenge to that. So if you take something like antibiotics, and all the antibiotics are now off patent. So there's no real incentive for a drug company to invest in antibiotics.
That's a problem.
Even though if you're at stage 7 and your flesh is eating itself and it's, you know, developed a resistance, you're in today's day and age.
That's what
kind
I mean. It's a problem.
Yeah. Let's switch gears and talk about angel investing and being on boards, or more specifically, being a female angel investor and being on boards. You know, tell our audience, you know, what's that like and, you know, what problems that can cause or opportunities.
Well, I think along with the plethora of angels and all these different, you know, places to get capital, you also open up investing to people who really don't understand what they're doing. And I, you know, they write a $10,000-$50,000 check and then they go play golf or whatever. You know, they don't necessarily know what's going on. Sometimes these people end up on boards and they don't really know what they're doing, which adds a wrinkle and a dimension. In terms of being a woman, you want me to play the woman card?
Absolutely.
Right? Okay. I would say probably in the last 10 years, I personally have not noticed anything. No radars have gone off for discrimination. When I first got into venture capital, though, great story. I'd been a venture capitalist for, I don't know, maybe 3 months. And I was sitting on the board of a company, and it was a consumer products company, one of our few, because we were very technology. And I came back after the board meeting to the office, and the main partner came up to me, and he said, "Now, listen, you know, you're causing a little bit of discomfort with the other investors, the other directors on the board." He said, "You know, you're young. You don't have the wingtip shoes and the gray hair. So if you have something to say, you really should lean over to one of the other older partners, in other words, a guy, and tell them what you want to say, and they'll say it for you."
Oh, my God.
I couldn't believe it. That was like.
Did you do it? We just got about 30 seconds here.
Didn't throw a knee.
No, I didn't.
Unbelievable. Has it gotten better just quickly?
Yeah, I think it has. I mean, I would say personally, for you know, maybe other women, maybe young women, it's probably because I'm old now, right? But maybe younger women feel differently. I haven't seen it. I mean, it's so politically incorrect.
So the moral of the story is angels aren't so angelic, but women are women.
That's funny, right. Leslie Stoll, who we talked to earlier, she talks about women becoming older and how it becomes easier for them to kind of assume a managerial role. It's in her book. It's interesting. Anyway, we got to run. Donna Patton, Managing Director at Accesso Innovation Partners. Woody Benson, along with her Bloomberg contributor, joining us from our Bloomberg 1200 studio in Boston here on Bloomberg Radio.